Hello and welcome into another episode of Locked On Wolves. Today on the show, John Hollinger at The Athletic listed in a recent article a couple reasons why you could panic about the Wolves. I'll push back a little bit, argue why I don't think those are reasons to panic about the Wolves. Feeling okay here after winning a couple in a row. We'll also preview Wolves Sixers on Saturday and what's upcoming in the schedule for the Wolves, how they match up with Philly. It's all upcoming on the show. Welcome in. You are Locked On Wolves.
You are Locked On Timberwolves. Your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beek and I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline, where the game starts. Happy Friday, everybody. Happy weekend. Weirdly enough, not a game day. The Wolves don't play again until Saturday. They have that double off day this week. Weirdly enough, they don't play again until Saturday. But we'll get you ready for Wolves Sixers a little later in the show. Plenty to get to before that. First of all, a big thank you for making Locked On Wolves your first listen every single day. Of course, Locked On Wolves is free and available everywhere, including YouTube, as well as all of your favorite audio platforms. That includes Locked On Sports Minnesota. It's a brand new Roku and Amazon Fire TV app. You can watch Locked On Wolves as well as all of your other favorite Locked On Minnesota shows. More great local sports coverage 24/7, and it's free. Again, the Locked On Sports Minnesota app on Roku or Amazon Fire TV. You can also follow our show, this show, on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and my account, which is at BBeacon, and that's with two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. All right. As mentioned, we'll talk Wolves Sixers here a little bit later in the show. First, though, I want to talk a little bit about John Hollinger at The Athletic wrote an article about rating panic meters basically through the first month-ish of the season. Like how much, taking stock of the first month, like any single month over the course of what's basically a five-month NBA regular season, or really 6 months, is going to look kind of weird, right? So if you take, like, it's always very arbitrary when you say, oh, in the month of January, in the month of February, like, does that really matter? It's always an arbitrary start end point. So this just happens to be the first month of the season. And I think it'd be interesting to go back and look and see, like, what's the predictive measure of the first 30 days or so of each NBA season? Like, how many teams that are really good in the first 30 days end up being a really good team for the majority of the season? I don't know. I'd be willing to bet that the first 30 days are probably about the noisiest of any 30-day, if we're just going to take a 30-day block, mid-October to mid-November. It has to be noisy, right? Because you've got all these teams integrating new players, and the Wolves are a perfect example of that. For instance, John Hollinger's article at The Athletic, of course, you have to have a subscription, but it's a fantastic read. He talks about several teams and rates them on a panic meter. He talks about the Sixers, they're 7-7. We'll talk more about them later in the show. He doesn't want to panic about Philly. Obviously, James Harden's been out. He's got the Clippers kind of somewhere in the middle. He's got the Heat somewhere in the middle in terms of, you know, how much to panic on them. The Warriors a little bit higher in the scale. The Nets and Lakers have the highest panic meter ratings of any teams. The Wolves are behind both Brooklyn and the Lakers. But the Wolves are a 7.1, a scale of 1 to 10, according to John Hollinger. I'll read a couple quick excerpts from what he says about the Wolves. He talks about how they've had a soft schedule, including two losses to San Antonio. He says, we knew going in that the pairing of Gobert and Towns would be a work in progress. Unfortunately, the first 14 games have been at the low end of expectations. The entire reason Minnesota, by the way, he wrote this before the Wolves won on Wednesday. The entire reason Minnesota reshaped its roster in the offseason was to import Gobert was to improve the defense, which ranks 21st. They're 28th in defensive rebounding. He asks how that's even possible with Gobert and Towns in the front court. He says some of the other issues appear more fixable. Edwards will get his shot straightened out sooner or later. They could try playing Kyle Anderson more and the rest of their stable, ineffective bench veterans less. By the way, John Hollinger never misses an opportunity to praise Kyle Anderson, of course. Meanwhile, Towns and Gobert will figure out more of the balance at both ends of the court, even if it remains an imperfect pairing. A solid win at Cleveland this week was the first portent that maybe things will be okay. And then he goes on to say, it's been a struggle in the exact ways everyone worried about when the trade happened. Transition defense, guarding stretch fours, and not enough space for Towns. He also, of course, had mentioned defensive rebounding. So I'll count that as four things he's got issue with the Wolves. defensive rebounding, transition defense, guarding stretch fours, and space for Towns to operate. I'm going to make the argument that you don't, at least 2.5 of those things are almost immediately fixable, right? Let's start with the defensive rebounding. Now, on the one hand, this was an issue last year too, right? The Wolves were a bottom three defensive rebounding team basically all season. Sitting here right now, even after the Cleveland game, the Wolves are 29th. Well, I should say not even after. They actually were a minus, what, 7, I think, on the glass against Cleveland on Wednesday, even though they won, not Cleveland. Who'd they beat Wednesday? Whichever, Orlando on Wednesday. They still were a minus on the glass. So they're 29th in defensive rebound rate. I talked about this a little bit leading into the Magic game on Wednesday. It's not because of Rudy Gobert, and you know it's maybe a little because of Towns. He's averaging a career low in rebound rate and rebounds per game, but it's every bit as much because the likes of Jaden McDaniels and Torian Prince and D'Angelo Russell and even Kyle Anderson, like these guys are all basically rebounding at something close to career low rates, and in some cases, literally career low rates. This has been a topic for the last week now. We talked about it extensively a week ago. It was an issue in the Cleveland game that the Wolves kind of overcame partway through. But go back to last week's losses to Memphis. You know, when the Wolves were on that losing streak, those no man's land rebounds, right? The long rebounds that don't go all the way out to the perimeter, but you have guards leaking out. You have guards not boxing out. You have no guards crashing the glass, and it's up to Gobert and sometimes Towns and you know, whoever else is playing the four, Prince, to try and rebound against other teams' bigs. And teams are putting one or two guys bodying up on Rudy on the glass to try and keep him from getting rebounds. And that leaves, you know, if the rest of the Wolves players are leaking down the floor, nobody's getting those defensive rebounds. Already, we've seen that improve. Late in the game against Cleveland on Sunday and pretty much during the Orlando game, even though they were out-rebounded by the Magic, the Wolves have seemed to improve over the past 2-3 games related to those no man's land rebounds. I do think the defensive rebound rate comes up as a team if the coaching staff can get these guys, the guards and the wings, to apply themselves on the defensive glass. That's the biggest thing. I mean, Hollinger's right. A team with Towns and Gobert should not be 29th in defensive rebound rate. I do think that's something that will improve somewhat, and I'm less concerned about that. Transition defense. I'm also a little bit less concerned about that because that's simply a matter of want to. And we saw that want to against Orlando on Wednesday. I get it. The Magic are one of the worst teams in the league in terms of turning the ball over. They do it a ton. They're sloppy. And it was one game, right? But it was a random Wednesday road game in Orlando. Like it wasn't, the Wolves got up for that game against Memphis on ESPN last Friday. They've gotten up for the TNT game. They seem to play to their competition, right? They didn't do that on Wednesday. They played for the majority of that game, outside of that early fourth quarter swoon. The Wolves played like they should have, which was as the better team when they were against the Magic. And a huge part of that is effort. And where that's most noticeable is in transition on both ends of the floor. Easy buckets, offensively pushing the pace, which is something they've struggled with at times this year too, being consistently pushing the pace on offense. But getting back in defense, getting back in transition on defense, hands in passing lanes, being competitive in half court defense, you know, for a full rotation instead of kind of giving up after the ball swings to the other side of the floor. Those things all looked better against Orlando. The transition defense, guarding the secondary break, you know, checking trailers, tagging guys in pick and roll game, just being physical and being present. The Wolves did that Wednesday. And as long as it wasn't a blip, and like I said a minute ago, one of the reasons I'm encouraged is that like it wasn't Friday night against Memphis on ESPN. It was Wednesday night in Orlando, and with no Paolo Banchero, very few people outside of Magic fans and Wolves fans were watching that game. And the Wolves played hard. And I know that that's kind of sad that that's what we're talking about, but a step in the right direction is what they did Wednesday. If they can apply themselves against Philly on Saturday night, and we see some continuous momentum in terms of playing hard in transition, they've got athletes and length on this team, the Timberwolves do, to be a good transition defense team. We know Anthony Edwards can do it in transition. We know Jaden McDaniels can do it in transition. Towns is a decent transition defender when he applies himself and isn't complaining for foul calls on offense. There's a lot to like about the Wolves transition defense-wise in terms of talent, potential, etc. It's a matter of playing hard and playing consistently. And it's not a personnel thing, right? We're not going to blame the Rudy Gobert acquisition. We're not going to blame the Wolves' shoddy transition defense on the Rudy Gobert transition. I don't think, acquisition. I don't think that makes a whole lot of sense. So I disagree with Hollinger there as well. Two other points that he makes that I want to get to. So we're going to do that here next. This episode of Locked On Wolves is brought to us by our friends over at Masterclass. With Masterclass, you can learn from the world's best minds at any time, anywhere, and at your own pace. There's plenty of classes to choose from over at Masterclass. You can learn how to negotiate with Chris Voss. You can learn how to write songs. John Legend teaches the art of songwriting over at Masterclass. Mariah Carey teaches using the voice as an instrument. And it's not just music either. There's Gordon Ramsay teaches cooking over at Masterclass. It really is a fantastic place to go with over 180 classes from a range of world-class instructors. The thing that you've always wanted to do is actually closer than you might think. I highly recommend that you check it out. This holiday, give one annual membership and get one for free. Go to masterclass.com/lockedon today. Again, it's masterclass.com/lockedon today. Masterclass is accessible on your phone, web, or smart TV. They offer classes on a variety of topics, all taught by world-class instructors at the top of their fields. Again, John Legend and Mariah Carey on music, Gordon Ramsay on cooking, Chris Jenner on personal brand. Like, there's tons of options to choose from. Each class is broken out into individual video lessons, usually around 10 minutes long. Members can explore at their own pace, and each class is supported by downloadable materials, class guides, recipes, or more, depending on the topic. You can find it all available at masterclass.com. Again, masterclass.com/lockedon. You can give one annual membership and get one for free. Masterclass.com/lockedon. Terms apply. Thanks again for making Locked On Wolves your first listen today. Now for your second listen, go check out Locked On Sports Today. From the games that matter the most to the biggest stories in sports, go beyond the scoreboard and behind the scenes with local experts and insights that only Locked On can provide. Locked On Sports Today, available on this app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, we talked about defensive rebounding. We talked about transition defense and why I am less concerned than John Hollinger is about those elements of the Wolves and areas in which they're struggling. Other things that he mentions are guarding stretch fours and not leaving enough space for Towns. Let's tackle the Towns one first. I don't know how much Timberwolves Hollinger has actually watched. I will say that I'm not all too concerned about the Wolves offense. After the Magic game on Wednesday, the offense now sits, they are number, let's see, my screen refreshed on me for some reason. Timberwolves are number 16 in offensive rating. And that's maybe even a little bit higher than I would have expected, right? They've had these moments where they've really struggled offensively. And we've talked about this on the show before. It's very much, it doesn't feel like it's the Rudy Cat thing, right? It's D'Lo and Ant learning to play with Rudy, Rudy learning to play with those guards. And it is what the spacing on the floor is, but it's not specifically related to Cat and Rudy. It's just Rudy figuring out what the best place to be is. There were some stats floating around. I think it was Kevin O'Connor at The Ringer was talking about Gobert and not getting the ball enough from Anthony Edwards in pick and rolls. And I thought that the stats cited the pick and rolls run between Ant and Rudy were, I think, misleading. The Wolves have run very few straight pick and rolls with Ant and Rudy Gobert, right? The Wolves are, they run a lot of false actions. They run a lot of kind of Horns-esque sets where they're running both Rudy and Cat at elbows or free throw line extended. And they're not straight pick and roll sets that Finch is running. It's a lot more read and react with, you know, screen and rescreen and cross screening between Rudy and Cat. Like they're starting, actually the second half, or really the fourth quarter against Orlando is a great example of this, where Finch called different sets, almost not different sets, a lot of the same sets actually, every time down the floor, they were running a play. And it worked. The Wolves are finally starting to get comfortable, at least the starting unit is, with themselves as the personnel on the floor and where everybody likes to be, where they like the ball. The D'Lo Rudy chemistry still isn't there either. And Hollinger brings this up related to Karl Anthony Towns. I actually think that Wednesday was another good example of how Towns can dominate a game in a really unique way. I think people assume, like national people that are casual fans that aren't Wolves fans, assume that Towns is just jacking threes, or you know, maybe a few years ago they assumed he was just, well, I guess this is true, a few years ago he was playing in the post a lot, But starting last year, he made this transition to really a face-up driver is what he did a ton. And now that's his game, right? He drives to set up the three. It's not as much the three to set up the drive. I mean, Towns has gotten really good at taking what the defense gives him. But he hasn't not been driving because of spacing issues, right? Because when Towns puts the ball on the floor, Rudy now has that feel. I think he's already improved at like, okay, Towns is putting the ball on the floor. Where should I be? Should I be in the opposite dunker spot? I can't be underneath the basket. Or if Towns has the ball on the perimeter, if you go back and watch the Magic game, a lot of times what was happening was Rudy was kind of sitting down in front of the rim, trying to seal his man and get a pass. Or Towns threw a couple of lobs over the defense to Rudy at the rim. Rudy got a couple of tip-ins that way and a layup that way. And then if the defense tries to get down, guard Rudy, then Towns can beat his guy off the dribble. There's always the dump-off pass available. He can kick it to the opposite corner. Towns has become so good at dribble driving, and that really started last year, that he can drive to set up the pass. And as long as Rudy understands his spacing, where he needs to be, this is a completely dynamic option for the Wolves. And then, of course, you have D'Lo, Ant, and Jaden McDaniels are on the perimeter. So the Wolves can still play. It essentially becomes four out with Rudy Gobert at the dunker spot. But I think that spacing works because Towns is a good enough passer to do it. I haven't really watched the Wolves offense, and outside of a couple of crowded Ant drives to the paint where Rudy and Kat are both kind of lingering and it allows defenders to essentially guard two players at once because the spacing is bad in those situations. Those are the only moments when I've said, the spacing's not good, right? It's very rarely because Towns is trying to operate and Rudy's in his way, or Rudy's trying to operate and Towns is in his way. That's not usually what the case is. It's more the guard play getting used to where Rudy is going to be. So I'm not super concerned about that either. The spacing thing, it's overplayed. What's different about how Rudy Gobert plays offensively versus how Jared Vanderbilt played offensively? And I'm not saying like skill-wise, like Rudy's got better hands. He's better on there. Obviously, he's a better offensive player. But what I mean is Jared Vanderbilt wasn't stretching the floor. The Wolves weren't running plays for Jared Vanderbilt. Jared Vanderbilt wasn't posting up. Rudy Gobert is not doing any of those things either. I know he's trying to, and they've called some plays here and there for him. But effectively, you're not calling very many plays for Rudy Gobert. There's not a whole lot different behind or surrounding the way that the Wolves should operate with Gobert on the floor offensively with how they would have operated with Vanderbilt. The only difference is Gobert's more of a lob threat. He's obviously a better screener and roller. But if you're the defense, you're not guarding Rudy Gobert. Or excuse me, if you're the Wolves, you're not calling plays for Rudy Gobert just like you weren't for Jared Vanderbilt. And you're not putting Rudy on the perimeter just like you would do with Jared Vanderbilt. The offense itself doesn't have to be drastically different. It just has more dynamic upside because Rudy's a lob threat, because he's a great screener. He's a fantastic roller. He's very good at diving to the rim. Defenses have to know where he is much more so than they did with Vanderbilt. As long as Rudy can fit into that role, and we've seen him a couple of times, really want the ball. And that's great. You want your bigs to want the ball as a rim run in transition or a lob threat or whatever. Rudy's not a post-up threat. And as long as he's okay with that and he's okay with getting his 15, 16 points a game on lobs and putbacks and transition, then they'll be just fine. It's a matter of whether or not the Wolves feel like they need to feed Rudy the ball in the half court and then things get a little murky there. But I'm not ultra worried about the spacing as John Hollinger is. The one thing I will agree with him on, and not that I'm disagreeing with the other points, I just, as somebody who covers the Wolves, am not super worried about these other things. Guarding stretch fours is an issue. Towns is good with guarding most fours, face-up situations, and he's actually done okay managing his foul trouble. But the Wolves haven't been a very good help defense team so far this year. And Towns can still get put on skates by guys who are really more threes playing the four, and teams are going to try and do that against the Wolves consistently. So I do worry a little bit about teams spreading the Wolves out, and of course that's how teams beat the Jazz in the playoffs, was making Rudy be on the perimeter and not get involved in the paint and block shots. Rudy's block rate is down. We talked about that the other day on the show. I think that'll tick upwards. That would be the one thing that worries me a little bit, is how are the Wolves going to guard some of these teams that go small and are quick and with bad help defense? And Ant talked about this in the media. He recognizes his off-ball defense needs to improve because what was his quote? He said something about he was tired of being clowned or tired of being called out or whatever because of his lackadaisical off-ball defense. If he commits to that, and Jaden McDaniels is Jaden McDaniels, and D'Lo commits, with D'Lo and Ant, it's all about committing to doing it. on a possession by possession basis, the Wolves can be okay defensively. The problem right now is Towns isn't good enough guarding face-up fours or fours in face-up situations. Rudy's not good enough on the perimeter against bigs who want to put the ball on the floor. For the Wolves to have a top 10 defense if they don't get adequate help defense from the rest of the guys on the team. And point of attack defense has been spotty too. It's been better of late. D'Lo, Jalen Noel's been spotty. Jordan McLaughlin's mostly been really good lately, but of course his size presents something of a limitation. Torian Prince has actually been a little bit up and down defensively. If they can just be more consistent, improve the help defense, the defensive rebounding will improve. Rudy's block rate will come up. The rim protection will improve. And I'd be a little less concerned. But as of right now, this team has to be a better defense than they are currently. They're currently 19th in defensive rating, and Gobert has only not been on a top 10 defense since he started, was a regular one time in 9 years in the league. So that's a rating that will, it should come up, and it needs to come up quickly for the Wolves. All right, let's close the show today by previewing the Wolves-Sixers matchup on Saturday night. Before we do that, though, this show, today's episode, is presented to us by BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for betting info on sports, including stats, news, and analysis. Get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there. From football to basketball to soccer and esports, they've got it all at betonline.net. A big weekend of college football, a big weekend of NFL football for that matter. Vikings are obviously on a roll. Tons to bet on, and a big Wolves weekend. They play Saturday, and then they turn around and play again Monday night as well. If you love sports podcasts, you can find those as well at BetOnline. They're always the fastest and easiest way to get your betting fix. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more. BetOnline, where the game starts. So the Wolves head to Philadelphia to take on the 76ers Saturday night. Philly plays on Friday. They have the national game against the Bucks at home. It's a 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 Central, 7:30 Eastern on ESPN on Friday night. So the Sixers are at home on a back-to-back. As of recording this, they are 7-7, pending the results of the Bucks game on Friday. Incidentally, the Wolves play Miami on Monday. They're also on the second night of a back-to-back. They play Sunday. So a couple of, and that game's at home. So a couple of decent schedule quirks in the Wolves' favor, I guess, right? Is the two off days, game Wednesday, two off days, and then playing a back-to-back team in the Sixers, and then Monday going home to play the Heat, who are also on a back-to-back. Now, of course, the Wolves play 5 out of 6 on the road, so that's less in their favor. But at any rate, so the Sixers, it remains to be seen, and perhaps by the time you listen to this, we'll know the answer. I don't know if Joel Embiid's going to play Friday, or if he plays, you know, rest Friday, plays Saturday, or plays Friday in the national TV game against the Bucks, which is probably more likely, and rests against the Wolves Saturday. I mean, he's been resting on back-to-backs for the most part this year, I believe. He's only played in 10 games. So it's entirely possible there's no Joel Embiid on Saturday. At any rate, Philly's 7-7. No James Harden. He's only played in 4 games so far this season. He's out for at least another 2-3 weeks. I'm sorry, he's played in 9 games this season. He's out for another 2 or 3 weeks. And with the foot. So no James Harden, perhaps no Joel Embiid. Really, it's been all about Tyrese Maxey so far this season for the Sixers. He's averaging just a hair under 23 points a game. And he's shooting 45% for the field and a really nice 40.8% on threes. He's been really good for them. And outside of Maxey, there isn't much else reliable for Philly if there's no Embiid, and we know there will be no James Harden. De'Anthony Melton's great off the bench. He was a big addition for Memphis. Tobias Harris, of course, still does his thing in the starting lineup. They've got a bunch of really good role players, but that's just it, is this team was built with a bunch of role players to surround Embiid and Harden and also Maxey. So like PJ Tucker, what did he play? 31 minutes in their win over the Jazz the other night, 30 minutes, and he scored 0 points. In fact, he didn't even take a shot in 30 minutes, PJ Tucker. He had 1 rebound, 1 assist, 1 steal, no shot attempts in 30 minutes. Just was out there for his defense and not even his rebounding, because he didn't rebound the ball either. So At any rate, if there's no Embiid and if we know there's no Harden, this becomes a fairly winnable game for Minnesota. Again, 7-7 for Philly. They recently beat the Jazz and Hawks, but they also lost to the Hawks this week. They've lost to the Knicks, they've lost to the Wizards, the Raptors. They started the season 0-3 after losing to the Celtics, Bucks, and Spurs. So some bad losses mixed in with some understandable losses. Matchup-wise, Philly's actually pretty middle of the pack in a lot of areas. They're like almost smack dab in the middle in terms of almost everything. Like their 3-point attempt rate, their free throw rate it's pretty good. It's actually top 10. Rebounding the ball, they're middle of the pack defensive rebounding wise. They don't get a ton of offensive rebounds. So this is actually a team the Wolves might do okay against on the glass. Again, especially if no Embiid. It's so hard because we just don't know. And that makes a massive difference. Their number one rebounder is Embiid. Their number two rebounder is James Harden, and he's out as well. And there's just not a ton of size, right? PJ Tucker's undersized. Montrezl Harrell off the bench he's a good rebounder, but he's not very big. This is a team the Wolves should be able to grab boards against and hold them to, you know, one and done opportunities. They cannot afford to give the Sixers second chance opportunities. Offensively, Philly struggled this year. They're 19th in offensive rating, which is, still ahead of the Wolves. They've shot the ball pretty well from three, but there aren't very many guys that are like true sharpshooters, right? Maxey's been shooting the ball really well. George Niang has been really good. PJ Tucker doesn't shoot very often, but he's 45% when he does. So they've got guys that in limited opportunities do a pretty good job at knocking down threes. The bigger thing for me is staying out of foul trouble. This team gets the line. Their free throw rate is sixth offensively in the league. And doing their best to run them off the three-point line. Even though they don't shoot a ton of threes, their percentage, their makes, they're 12th in the league. Limit the second chance opportunities, contest three-pointers, and don't turn the ball over against Philly to give them those opportunities. They don't play fast, right? Their pace is bottom five in the league, but it's just another reason to not give them easy buckets. If Embiid doesn't play, this is a very winnable game for Minnesota, and I actually don't hate the matchup at all. They'll just need to be aggressive with Tyrese Maxey, and that's probably an ant cover, right? That's not going to be D'Lo covering Maxey. But if they can check him defensively, then the Wolves have a real chance to win this game on Saturday. And then peeking ahead, Miami on Monday. Miami's another team that's disappointed so far this season, and again coming on a back to back. So the Wolves could have some pretty fortuitous, like on Sunday they played a shorthanded Cavs team on Sunday, right? And they had to hang on to beat them, but they ended up winning on Sunday against Cleveland. They played a Magic team shorthanded, no Paolo Banchero, no Wendell Carter Jr. on Wednesday. And now on Saturday, there's a real chance. I mean, we already know there's no James Harden. There's a chance there's no Joel Embiid. And then you take on the Heat Monday. Who knows who could be resting or not playing in that game. But the Heat on the second night of a back-to-back, the Wolves could have the opportunity to rack up some nice wins. You know, the Cavs, if they could beat the Sixers, and obviously winning against the Magic in there, that could be three in a row going into the Miami game that's winnable Monday. Even if there's some buts in there, some guys missing time, some back-to-backs, some, you know, rest advantages, it all evens out in the end for the most part anyway, right? A win is a win is a win. Right now, it's all about building momentum and building confidence. This team needs to build confidence in itself and give its fan base confidence that they can figure this thing out. This is the perfect opportunity to go on that run before they have another long stretch of road games over the next couple of weeks and some more tough opponents on the horizon. So a winnable game in Philly, especially if Embiid doesn't play. Of course, we'll do the live postcast with Marnie Gellner from Bally Sports North roughly 45 minutes following the completion of Saturday's game. We'll be back on Monday with a full show previewing Wolves Heat and talking about takeaways from the weekend as we get back into the rhythm next week, Monday through Friday shows. Although I guess it is Thanksgiving next week, we'll likely do four regular shows, but we'll still do live postcasts after every Wolves game. So I'll update that schedule next week. A big thank you to those of you that do make Lockdown Wolves your first listen every day. It's greatly appreciated. And of course, you can find the show everywhere. That includes YouTube as well as all of your favorite audio platforms. You can also watch on Lockdown Sports Minnesota, the Roku and Amazon Fire TV app, and you can follow on Twitter at Lockdown T-Wolves and at BBeacon. That's with two Bs, two Es, C-K-E-N. Thanks again for listening to Lockdown Wolves podcast. Of course, we're part of the Lockdown Podcast Network. Remember, the Lockdown Network is your local experts on all the biggest stories. A reminder that you can make your second listen, our friends over at the Lockdown Sports Today podcast. It's a fantastic listen. It's the biggest stories of the day, plus instant reactions, big game recaps, and the take of the day. It's available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get podcasts. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.